The president reassures, but markets are tanking. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The president tried to reassure last night.
This is not a financial crisis. This is just a temporary moment of time that we will overcome together as a nation and as a world.
He announced a ban on travel from Europe and said the Small Business Administration would offer support to businesses affected by the coronavirus. He promised support to people who couldn't work because of the virus. But markets have not responded well. They just hit a circuit breaker moments ago, meaning a temporary halt in trading. This is the second time this week. Lindsay Piegza is chief economist and managing director at Stifel Nicolaus & Co. and joins us to figure out what's going on. Hi, Lindsay.
Good morning.
Why this massively negative reaction to the president's speech last night?
Well, I think it was a high bar of expectations in terms of what steps the administration should take. The president did impose some travel restrictions, and he talked about the administration working on targeted measures to cover testing and sick leave. But with a lack of specifics, the market really was left unsatisfied.
Well, what more do you think they wanted to see?
Well, I think the response needs to be larger, including some of these ideas that the president did throw around in terms of delaying the payroll tax, in terms of offering additional loans to small businesses.
The European Central Bank is announcing stimulus measures. Do you think that will calm markets?
Well, I do think, again, the market was expecting additional action, this time from the ECB in terms of lowering outright targeted rates on a monthly basis. So I do think this will help provide additional liquidity to the overseas market. But is it the silver bullet that will help stave off any further downward pressure on the European economy? Certainly not.
Lindsay Piegza, chief economist and managing director at Stifel Nicolaus & Co., thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
There was another monumental announcement last night. The National Basketball Association said it was suspending its season indefinitely beginning today. It made the call after a player for the Utah Jazz tested positive for the new coronavirus. This is a $9 billion industry coming to a halt. Kenneth Shropshire is CEO of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University. Kenneth, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
What is the financial impact on the NBA, the stadiums, its teams?
Yet to be determined. I mean, it's stunning that it's occurred, and I think the balance they looked at was life versus death. It was a health crisis, and at these times, those are the decisions that have to be made, and economics are secondary.
What about the impact on players and their salaries? Because don't ticket sales affect future salary caps?
Sure. This will ultimately come into play and can even ultimately trigger a renegotiation, in essence, of the entire collective bargaining agreement if play is suspended for an extended period of time. But again, I give the NBA credit for leading the way and saying all these things had to be put aside in this moment.
The NCAA announced that its NCAA tournament players will play in front of empty stands. Do you think they're going to follow the NBA's lead or the NHL too?
I suspect there are ongoing conversations about that. What we have to contemplate, I mean, the ultimate event people were thinking about was the Olympics and the idea that maybe those could be played in front of empty stands. And then you realize there's an Olympic Village where 20,000 athletes would be congregating together from around the world. So this is a mini version of it, even if you only have 10 athletes on the floor, or 5 from each team. There's still this intermingling of athletes that could spread the virus. And so, you know, think about it. If one person is potentially going to suffer harm because a sporting event is held, where is the balance and what's more important?
Kenneth Shropshire is CEO of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University. Kenneth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hundreds of thousands of people cross back and forth between the U.S. and Mexico every day for a number of reasons. Maybe they have a job on the other side, or maybe they live on the other side. Maybe they have a family that needs attention. You don't think of a border crossing as a mass gathering, but it really kind of is. Marketplace's Andy Euler is in Brownsville, Texas, trying to figure out what's changed at the border as a result of COVID-19. Andy, what are people telling you?
Right. So I spent yesterday hanging out at a bus stop just a few yards from the border. It's where I ran into Juan Benavides. He lives in Matamoros, which is literally just yards, maybe a couple of miles from Brownsville, from the Texas border. He has business partners on the Brownsville side, and he was meeting up with them. And I asked him how concerned he was about COVID-19. And he says, personally, sure, he's trying to make sure to wash his hands and pay attention to the news. But people in Matamoros and the government official there don't really seem all that concerned.
La gente sigue yendo a sus trabajos, se transporta.
He says everybody's continuing to go to work, public transportation and movement of people is all the same. He says everything is calm and nobody really seems all that worried about it in Mexico. And you can see that at the official border crossing, too.
So people are still crossing. People aren't working from home like so many companies are doing here in the U.S.?
Right. I kept asking folks at the border about exactly that. And almost to a person, they told me that that's not really an option there in Mexico. What's interesting is that one woman I spoke with, Maria Guadalupe Contreras, who also lives in Matamoros and was visiting family in Brownsville, said the only people she knows who are not going to work anymore are people who work in the healthcare industry.
Yo tengo un amigo que trabaja en un centro.
So she says she has a friend who works at a healthcare center in Matamoros, and those are the people who have rules about not coming in. She says she knows a few people in Matamoros who are on salary, but nobody's really asking them to work from home. And nobody is treating the border as a large gathering place, which it undoubtedly is. Everybody that I spoke with said nobody with Customs and Border Patrols asked how they were feeling, if they had any health concerns or anything about that. They just wanted to see paperwork and make sure they had a legal right to work in Brownsville.
Marketplace's Andy Euler reporting from Brownsville, Texas. Thanks very much.
You got it, Sabri.
The White House and congressional leaders are hammering out the details of a package to help limit the economic effects of COVID-19. Democrats have proposed requiring companies to give workers affected by the virus paid sick time. Several companies are already changing their policies. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
Walmart announced this week it would start offering paid sick leave to employees diagnosed with COVID-19. And Darden Restaurants, parent company of Olive Garden, sped up its plan to give workers paid sick leave.
And so at moments like this, whether it's coronavirus or at one time in the past H1N1 or flu epidemics, we know that people pay closer attention when these issues are impacting their daily lives.
Sarah Fleisch-Fink is with the National Partnership for Women and Families, which advocates for paid sick leave, which she specifies is different from a block of paid time off workers can use for any reason.
So somebody could have access to vacation time or PTO or annual leave, but often that time needs to be requested in advance. Workers can be penalized for using the time through absence control policies.
But even companies that want to offer paid sick leave may worry about how much it will cost. Nicholas Zibart at Cornell University has been studying just that.
We find that newly covered employees take on average 2 days a year. And we also find that labor costs do increase, but the increase is relatively modest. It's like 21 cents per hour worked.
Big companies like Darden or Walmart can manage that, but it can be harder for small businesses with fewer employees to fill in missing shifts. That said, closing down because of an infection can cost a lot more. Holly Wade is director of research at the National Federation of Independent Business. She says in this tight labor market, paid sick leave can be an attractive recruiting tool.
They're looking to fill open positions, and they also don't want to lose productivity in having a sick employee in their establishment.
And more businesses are choosing to give their employees paid sick time, especially as COVID-19 infections spread. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
it is your last chance to get our new Marketplace t-shirt with a donation of just $30. Whether you're giving for the first time or renewing your support, this is an opportunity that you don't want to miss. But don't hesitate. This special offer ends this week. Contribute to independent journalism that you trust today at marketplace.org and get this shirt as a special thank you from us. Once again, it's marketplace.org, and thank you.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
As coronavirus spreads, brick-and-mortar retailers are in a difficult position. They want customers to be safe, but they also want them to shop. Kristen Schwab has more.
That whole don't touch your face thing? Shoppers at Sephora in Manhattan are not having it. They're dipping their fingers into eyeshadow and blush. I find Mariana Sadakni testing foundation.
Makeup goes to your face. You're not supposed to touch your face. People are touching makeups and I'm touching my face. So now I am feeling very guilty that I'm doing a bad thing, even though I washed my hands before.
Throughout the store, employees are cleaning. One worker wiping down a makeup display told me to test products on my hands. Another gave me hand sanitizer on the way out. And Sephora has plenty of company. Target says it's cleaning checkout lanes every 30 minutes. Starbucks has banned travel mugs. SoulCycle is waiving last-minute cancellation fees.
And that matters.
Barbara Kahn is a professor at the Wharton School.
First of all, it does literally matter. And second of all, it shows that they understand what the issues are.
Kahn says in-person shopping is increasingly about building brand loyalty through experience. And experience includes feeling safe. Kahn says that sends a message that will outlast the virus itself. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.